smoking hot today, huh? Let's hear it for the band. They've knocked it out today. You know, my name's Kurt. It's great to have you here today. PJ, thank you, and your team up there. You know, we are in week two of My Bad Church Experience, and as Eric said, we've been taking a look at some of the things that keep us out of church. And just out of curiosity, how many of you have ever been bored in church at one point or another? I know I have. I mean, it's like you're sitting in Charlie Brown's classroom, right? I mean, you're like, you know, his teacher's just like, wah, 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 wah. You know, and that's one of the things that for many people actually keeps us out of church. And, you know, early on here at Crosspoint, we kind of made this conscious decision that we were going to have certain things that we would do that had absolutely no value whatsoever. But they were fun, right? They were there. They'd make us laugh because we believed it. Begins to happen is as if you haven't ever seen that before in church. I mean, when church is boring, you know, many churches, you get bored. And I know I've had that experience. And what happens is if we get bored too long, all of a sudden we begin to endure church. And that's miserable. There's no fun in that. And the longer we endure church, we're likely to eventually begin to endure God. And all of a sudden we begin to approach God just like some religion, kind of like I just go do certain things and I go through the motions. And you know, we forget that there's actually a relationship here. And here's the thing. We're about a lot of things here at Crosspoint. There's certain things we're not about. And one of those things, let me be really clear, is we're not about just being in church. And if you don't get anything else out of today, I want you to see this phrase right here. God does not take attendance. And you're like, oh, I was here today too. And, you know, God does not take attendance. And, you know, for some reason in the American church culture, we've kind of, you know, created this thing where we're about being in church. You know, kind of like, have you been in church? I haven't been in church. I need to get my family in church. Man, I really need to get in church. And it's like all the while, it's become like this theological category that, man, if you can be in the building and I can be in the building and Elvis can be in the building, you know, then, man, we're just going to have this like magnificent spiritual experience. And we begin judging our spirituality, if you will, based on whether or not we've actually been in the building. And if you've been around Crosspoint for any time at all, you realize we don't put a lot of credibility in this. We believe that it's way, way, way bigger than that. In fact, you know, some of you grew up in families where you never miss church. I mean, you know, and yet on Monday through Saturday, you're always looking for some evidence that your family had actually been there. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, you're like, man, by golly, we hate each other, but we're going to church. I mean, we're going to sit together and love it even though we don't like each other. And, you know, and like there's value to being in the building, and we just don't believe that that's all of it. You know, some of you grew up like me, and you were in church like every time the doors were opened. I mean, you got like the attendance badge, you know, like perfect attendance. And it's like Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, you know, Thursday night, Monday night, Saturday morning, every time. And one of the things that happened, though, is that, you know, you were like screwed all up, even though you were in the building all the time. And what that leads to is eventually when we get to the age where we can quit church, you know what happens? We quit. And we walk away, kind of like the song said there, you know, we feel like, you know, I'm just walking on by, right? Maybe the church we feel like is walked on by. I don't get it. I don't connect with it. Nothing's relevant to where my life is. And I just don't feel like it's making a difference. And so, you know, see here at Crosspoint, we actually believe a few things. We believe that God can be called Father. That God actually desires to have a relationship with us. Not just some do's and don'ts and a bunch of stuff we just come and do, but that he actually sent his son Jesus, who came not only to show us how to live, but he also came to pay for our sins. And that ultimately we, you and I both, actually can become more and more in the likeness of Christ. I mean, we actually believe that, and we've discovered you know, that part of that, not all of it, but part of the way that we grow in that way, that we experience those things, is through coming into environments like this, where we, you know, kind of break open and look at some of the stories of the Bible, and we listen, and you know, we learn, and we listen, and we gather information, and we gather more information, and that's just a part of it. And nobody can tell it better than Jesus himself. So I want you to take a look at one of his stories. It's called a parable. And this is kind of how Jesus boring-proofed it. He actually said there's actually a role that you and I both play in this. And so he just finished this thing called the Sermon on the Mount. Everybody loves the Sermon on the Mount, right? I mean, it's cool. I love the Sermon on the Mount, except we don't do it, right? Because it's hard. I mean, it's hard stuff, the Sermon on the Mount. And so here's what he said at the end of that, though. He said, therefore, everyone, ta-da, that's you, right? Everyone, he said, everyone who hears these words of mine, and basically what he's saying is everybody who comes and hears, who's sitting in a row, you know, some of you are taking notes, some of you, you know, brought your big old Bible in, that's cool, some of you are tweeting, you know, tweeting's kind of like your way to, like you thought God took attendance. You're like, man, I'm going to tweet something so people knew that I was there. In fact, I hope he says something interesting that I can, like, you know, get a mention for, and so, you know, he's saying, basically, this is what he's saying right here. Everybody comes and sits down, and then he goes on. He says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into, we don't like this word right here, practice. He says, everyone who hears these words and puts them into practice. You're like, no. I like the first part. I just like to come and hear. I mean, I like the hear part. I don't necessarily like the practice part. He says, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on a rock. Remember that little song? Anybody remember that song? Wise man built his house on the rock. The wise man built his house on the rock. Remember that song? And then what happens next? The rains came down, the floods came up. The rains came down, the floods came up. The rains came down. And at the end of the song, you know what it says? It says, and the man who built his house on the rock, his house stood firm. All right? And then Jesus goes on. He goes on. He says, but everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. So he's like, the rains came down, the floods came up, the rains came down, the floods came up, the rains came down, and whatever. It's like the favorite part of the song right here, right? You can do it with me if you know. It's like, and the house on the sand went... Yeah. Oh, I love it. All the people in the front rows kind of knew what to do, right? I mean, the people in the back row are like, because there are like motions. See, there were motions with the song, because what Jesus was saying was the guy who built his house on the sand with no foundation, the thing fell flat, all right? It fell flat. And Jesus actually, he actually has an incredible point right here. Here's what he's saying. Here's what he's saying in this parable right here. He's saying, hey, look, I appreciate you being here. It's great that you're here. Matthew, thank you for taking notes. John, thank you for writing this down. People are going to benefit from this someday. But listen, it's great that you're here, but it's not enough to just hear it if you don't do anything with it. It's not enough to just hear it and believe it. It's not enough to just hear it and like feel convicted by it. It's not enough to just hear it and go, because that's what Christian people like to do. You know, that's like the I don't like that, but I'm just going to sigh and act like I like it. He's like, you know, even if you do that, you know, that's not enough. We have to hear and then put it into practice. Otherwise, you're like the foolish man who built his house without a foundation. And when the storms came and the rain came and the storms came and the rain came, here's how Jesus concludes it. He says, it fell with a great crash. So you know why we gather in this room every week? We gather in this room every week. You know, we gather in this room, we learn. We gather in this room, we break open the Bible and look at some of the scriptures, you know, and the teachings of the Bible from Jesus. And it's because too many of us have already had a crash in our life and we don't want another one. And we realize that, you know, some of you have crashed your marriage and you're like, I don't want to crash another marriage. Some of you have crashed financially and you're like, I don't want to crash financially again. Some of you have crashed other relationships and you're like, I don't want to crash again. You've crashed with your kids and, you know, and you're like, I just don't want to crash anymore. And what we've discovered is that a part of what we do, not everything, but a part of what we do is we come in and we hear these words and then we actually apply them to our lives. We actually do it and it helps us avoid future crashes. And the group that excites me the most, to be honest with you, is high school students, junior high students. I mean, listen, man, you guys excite me because, you know, it's one of those things that you're pre-crash, all right? That means, like, it's not like you're smarter than everybody else. I know sometimes you think that. I mean, it's not like you're smarter than everybody else, but what it means is you have not had as many years to crash as hard as the rest of us. And so, see, you actually have the opportunity to get this one right from the beginning if you take these things. And see, this is not boring, because if you take these things and apply them to your life, you actually, when the storms come and the rains come, just like the song, the house built on the rock stands firm. And that, there's nothing boring about that. I mean, that actually makes sense. That connects. That's relevant to where I am, because my life is better. And I mean, the bottom line is this. Bottom line is that, you know, at the end of the day, hearing and doing is what makes the difference. Meaning, our most important agenda here at Crosspoint is not just to have fun. It's not to indoctrinate people at all. I could care less about that. It's to actually make the application. See, here's the thing. In our gatherings and our services, our kids' environments, if you listen on podcasts, you download those things off the, you know, off the line from the internship. You'll get that later if you watch the internship. Off the line. You know, we're not content with just hearing, and we actually want to take it further. You know, this is why we have these things on our connection cards called next steps. Because, you know, we integrated these because every week we want every single one of us, including myself, to walk out and say, okay, what is my next step? Even if it's a baby step, what's the step I'm taking? So I'm not just hearing, but I'm actually doing. Because when it comes down to it, hearing is not enough. Doing makes all the difference. You know how I know that? Here's how I know that. I want you to just think for a moment about that piece of exercise equipment in your home somewhere. You know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, remember how excited you were when you got it in the house? I mean, you're like, you lugged that thing all the way up to your loft or down to your basement, and you just felt better because it was there. You're like, man, I feel good. It's in my house. Listen, you were not better. You just felt that way, right? You just thought you were better. You know, and Jesus says, hey, you can have all the equipment you want, but you actually have to do something with it. And the same is true in advancing our relationship with Jesus. You know, this is what we want to do. We want to advance our relationship with God, regardless of where our step is. What that next step is, we want every single person every weekend to say, okay, here's what it means for me to advance my relationship with God. Now, years later, James, he's the brother of Jesus, which wouldn't that be cool to be Jesus' brother? I mean, think of the stories you could tell, right? I mean, that's like a story for another time, but just imagine this. I mean, James actually thinks and believes that Jesus is the Messiah. He actually believes Jesus is who he says he is, which if you're somebody who's kind of a cynic, as I kind of am, you know, this is a great indicator that the Bible is actually true, all right? Because, I mean, think about this. I mean, my family, four boys I grew up with, I mean, I was the oldest. Think if I went to my brothers and I was like, hey, guys, guess what my dad said? I'm God's gift to the world. You know how they would have handled that? They would have taken me and be like, you know, they would have like worked it out physically, but James actually believes it. He's like, yeah, he is who he says he is. And so take a look at this. James, the brother of Jesus, we actually have one of his letters preserved in the New Testament. And here's what his take was on what Jesus said. He said, do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Now, isn't that amazing? He knew exactly, 2,000 years ago, he knew exactly what you and I would be dealing with, you know, in our churches today. I mean, this propensity, this tendency that we have to deceive ourselves in thinking that, man, I heard it, so I must be making progress. You know, like the treadmill. Like, I bought it, I put it in the house, man, I'm feeling good. You know, I got the weights, I put them down next to my bed, so I'm good. Kind of like, you know, I pulled into the parking lot, I navigated the crowd, I found my seat. I even sang a few songs and got emotional. I must be making progress. And James is like, no, don't deceive yourselves. See, this is another part of our church culture that I'm not sure where this came from. You know, somewhere along the line, we've made going to church synonymous with feeling bad. We've taken this whole idea of guilt and feeling really bad about having this heightened spiritual experience. And it's kind of like the worse you feel about yourself, the better and closer you are to God, right? And it's emotional. I mean, people will come up to me and they'll be like, man, girl, that was a great service. I'm like, awesome. So what made it great? I'm like, man, I was really convicted. Awesome, what are you gonna do with that? Well, nothing, but I mean, when I was in that moment, I mean, I just felt so close to God. I felt so bad about myself when I looked at who God is and who I am, and man, I'm just better. See, we've confused guilt and feeling bad and this whole idea of inadequacy. We've kind of made that synonymous with growing close to God. We've confused that with an authentic relationship with God, and that's about as close as it's ever gotten for some of us. We walk in, we feel bad. Oh, I'm close to God. James, he says, don't confuse yourself. Don't leave the service just thinking you've made progress because you've heard something, because you felt something. You know what he says? He goes on. He says this. He says, do what it says. That's how he ends that sentence right there, that phrase. And I guess it kind of ran in the family, right? I mean, that's Jesus. He's like, you know, Jesus, John, James. I mean, they kind of got this. And so James then goes on and he gives us this like incredible word picture. All right, I mean, just this great picture of what it looks like for you and I. What it looks like when we find ourselves in that place where we're kind of enduring church. And you know, we do all kinds of things around here. I mean, we say it all the time in our creative elements. You know, we'll do anything short of sinning to help you connect. I mean, if there's something we can do that will help you see Jesus for who he is, man, we'll go there. We'll stop just short of the line of sinning. Some people say we do sin. You know, we've got to feel good about what we do and feel like if there's something we can do to help you take a step, to take the next step in your faith, to see Jesus can actually be fun. I can laugh in church. I write handwritten notes to guests every week, and I'll actually say, I hope you had fun. And sometimes people are like, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. Like the flash mob, you know, most of you are like, I shouldn't get up and do this. It's like, God's going to strike me down the moment I do this, right? So, you know, he goes on. James gives us this incredible word picture. He says, anyone who listens to the word, there's that word again, listen, hear, listen, but does not do, there's another one of our words, what it says is like somebody who looks at his face in the mirror and after looking at himself, he goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. Now, this is interesting because this was somewhat relevant to them back then, but this is incredibly relevant to you and I today. See, back in that day, people that day rarely ever saw a really clear image of what they looked like. I mean, imagine going your whole life and never seeing a true reflection of who you are. I mean, the best they would get is kind of like in the movies, you know, in the old westerns, you'd see like a cowboy go up to like a pail of still water and slowly go over it and you'd see a reflection. That's about as clear of a reflection as they'd get. But see, in our day, we understand this, right? I mean, we come into a place like this and we sit and we hear and, you know, of course, here we're giving you visuals and media and, you know, instead of a video, man, we gave you like the real live deal today. I mean, how many times you get to see me dance? I tell you, it's like once, all right? And so, you know, I mean, we'll play lights and loud music in case you start to fall asleep. Why? Because we're trying to help you connect and make the application. But, you know, we come into an environment like this, and you listen to what is said, you listen to what Jesus said, and you're aware you need to make a change. We come in like, yeah, man, I'm aware I need to do something different in my family. I come in, I hear, you know, what Jesus' picture of our finances is and how it actually works well and we're not under the heaviness of debt, which I've learned recently. And we see that and like, I don't want to live that way. Or we feel like, man, I really need to invest more in my kids or more in my marriage. Or maybe if you're a student, I just need to confess to my parents. And so we come in here and we're made aware of these things. But then when we leave, it's like we go out and we don't change. And James says it's kind of like this. It's kind of like you getting up in the morning and kind of slumbering into the bathroom. You know, you flip on the light, stand in front of the mirror, and you look at yourself and you're like, oh man, that needs some work today. And then you just like go on and get dressed and don't do anything about it. You go on to work. And see, I know how long you stand in front of the mirror every morning, just so you know. You know how I know that? Here's how long you stand in front of the mirror. You stand in front of the mirror until it gets better. Every single day, all right? You stand there until it gets fixed, all right? You stand in front of that mirror until you like what you see, right? The only people that don't do that are like seventh graders and below. I mean, and that's if they actually get to the mirror, right? I mean, remember in junior high, you know, you'd be like calling your parents, hey, mom and dad, I want to sleep over at so-and-so's house. And your parents would say something like, well, do you need me to bring you some things? Hey, remember that? As adults, you know, we know that. I mean, like, if I'm going to go sleep over at my friend's house, which would be kind of weird. That'd be really weird, actually. Hey, honey, I think I'm going to go stay the night at Dave's house tonight, my neighbor. She'd probably, Julie, be like, okay, let me know how that works. You know, but as adults, when we go away and we go to sleep at a hotel or on a business trip, we have, like, a whole case of stuff we take with us, right? But I mean, remember in middle school, you'd be like, Mom, I'm going to stay the night. And they're like, do you need me to bring some things? And you're like, what things? And your mom's like, well, what are you going to sleep in? You're like, well, the same thing I played in all day. And she's like, well, but what are you going to wear tomorrow? Well, the same thing I slept in. You're like, why are we having this conversation? You know, and like that's, but see, as we grow up, eventually we mature out of that, hopefully. And we stand in front of the mirror in the morning and we do what we see and we address what we see. You see, this is one of those things that eventually we outgrow that. And so to sit under the teachings of Jesus, James is saying, and to hear that, man, there's some things that need to change in my heart. Some things that need to change in my relationship. Some things that need to change. And, you know, I maybe need to forgive someone, or I need to receive forgiveness. Or maybe there's a relationship I actually need to get out of. To see that and be like, there's some things that need to change right there. And then to just like leave without doing anything about it, he says, that's ridiculous. You wouldn't do that in the real world. I mean, again, that's why we'll do anything. I mean, we'll do anything short of sinning to help you make a connect, to help you have fun, to help you see that, man, there's something relevant here and that you can actually have fun in the process. I mean, for some of you today, you've never seen a dance mob in church before. That's why you didn't know what to do, right? And you didn't know how to, like, should I join? Should I not? I mean, these, you know, and yet you're sitting there maybe thinking, man, church has changed a bit. Or maybe you didn't like it at all. Maybe you'd like to go back to your church, right? And so, you know, or maybe you know, that cover song, you know, by Simple Minds from the Breakfast Club. You're like, you know, yeah, I feel like church has passed me by. I feel like there's never anything that connects with me. I feel like it's just walked on by. It kind of left me in the back. You know, it doesn't connect with my life today. But I dig that. Every time I hear that song now, I'll remember what happened at Crosspoint. See, that's our goal. We want to help you make the connect. And in the real world, see, here's what happens. In the real world, you don't get credit for looking in the mirror. All right? Meaning, in the real world, you know, you look in the mirror and you look bad, right? And your hair's on one side and your face is all like puffy and yucky, you know, and you just look bad. And after 2 or 3 days of not doing anything about that, you go to work that way every day and somebody's like, hey, dude, what's going on? And you're like, what? What are you talking about? You get all defensive like you do with your religion. You're like, what are you talking about? Don't tell me what to do. You know, and you're like, hey, dude, I get it. I just noticed, man. You're like letting everything go and you need to find an edge in that beard somewhere. I mean, I get it, like growing it out. That's fine. Just find an edge there. And you're like, what are you talking about? Man, I look in the mirror. I saw it. Like, oh, okay, great. As long as you know what it looks like, it's good. You know, yeah, that wouldn't work that way, right? I mean, in the spiritual world, that's what we do, though. We come in and we think, man, if I just hear, and oftentimes we feel like we're just enduring church because it's not making the connect. We're not making the connect. I mean, imagine going to work every day, day after day after day, and somebody's finally like, hey, dude, what's up? Are you okay? And you're like, oh, you need to pray for me. Like, okay, what do I pray for? Oh, man, I need to shave. Oh, pray for me. I've got these, like, red pimples popping up on my face. And, you know, you're going to be like, oh, I'm not going to pray for you. Do something about it. They got applications for that. Get a razor. I just go, you see it, you don't like it, go do something about it. But you see, you know, we do that in every other arena of life. We do something except when it comes to this arena. James, he goes on. He says, but whoever looks intently, now this is interesting. Many of you have an intently mirror at home. You know what an intently mirror is? An intently mirror is that mirror, you know. It's always at the nicer hotels. Some of you have one in your bathroom where when you look in it, your face is magnified like 20 times. You're like, whoo, you know. And you see every pore and piece of dirt and blemish on your face. That's an intently mirror because you're looking very intently at what you want to see. He says, whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives, and then this next word should bother us a little bit, all right? Because for many of us, if we've had bad church experiences, for many of us, you know, this next word, I mean, you're probably the last word that comes to your mind when you think of church and Jesus and religion and spirituality is freedom. You're like, freedom? What are you talking about? Freedom? There's nothing about freedom when it comes to the church and the Bible. I mean, it's everything. No, no, no. Don't. I mean, it's like a parent talking to a three-year-old all the time. And see, I used to think that way. I mean, that's why I used to think about the Bible, and it's changed for me a bit because I've actually got older. I've actually seasoned a little bit. And for instance, I know the Bible talks about how we should forgive. And you're like, forgive? What do you mean forgive? Let me get this straight. You want me, somebody to do something to me, and then you want me to go and give them a gift of forgiveness? That's stupid. I mean, there's nothing, you know, normal about that. Why would I do that? And you're like, I don't believe in forgiveness. I believe in payback. Man, you do something to me, then you owe me. See, James says, no, but whoever looks intently into the perfect law gives freedom. He says, no, you got it. There's a different way to do it. He said, when somebody does something to you, you know what you should do? You should actually forgive. Because when you forgive, you actually cancel the debt. And you're like, are you kidding me? Why would I cancel that? I mean, I, I used to think that way. I used to hold things over people's heads all the time. And as I've gotten older, I've changed and I've realized that there is actually a gift in there. partly because I've been around a lot of people that have failed to ever forgive. I mean, maybe you've been around people. Maybe you've been around a dad who, you know, his whole life carried around something his dad did with him, for him, to him, and he's never forgiven him for it. Or maybe you've walked around with, you know, and been raised by a mom who never forgived her sister for something that happened like decades ago. Or you work with people who are so bitter and angry, and it's like every person they interact, they're in customer service, and they're like jumping down the phone at people because, you know, there's so much bitterness and anger inside of them that, you know, they're like bound. They're not free because they've never forgiven. The perfect scripture says you need to forgive, because when you forgive, you actually release something. You actually release yourself. And so you see, when we actually do what the scripture teaches, it's amazing. We actually hear and do. We actually make the application. Then it's interesting how, I mean, our lives would be so much better. I mean, for some of us, we wouldn't have this alcohol addiction any longer. We wouldn't, you know, be constantly dealing with sexual missteps if we'd actually hear and then do. We wouldn't constantly be in bad relationships if we took the wisdom from the Bible and we'd hear and do. See, it only makes a difference if we hear and then we do. Listen, as your pastor, I want you to be free. I want you to be free on this. I mean, you're never going to be free to listen to me talk. All right, you're never going to be free, you know, downloading a podcast and listening to that. You're never going to be free just sitting in a row in an auditorium. I mean, you're only going to be free when you actually do something with what you hear. All right, and here's how James finishes up. He says, freedom will come and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it. They will be blessed in what they do. So you see, 7 years ago, when we were sitting around a table dreaming about what this church would become, you know, one of our big questions was, how can we assure that people don't come and just endure church? I mean, how, you know, we want it to be fun. We believe God created us to laugh, but it needs to be more than fun. It needs to be more than lights, more than loud music. There needs to be something magnetic about what takes place here, and something that catalyzes and motivates us, you know, to allowing God to move in our lives, seeing the connection, seeing that the scripture is relevant. And we discovered something. As we went through that process, we discovered that church is way more than 70, 75 minutes in an auditorium. We just found out, you know, it's way more than that. That's a part of church. But what we began to realize is we've got to get people out of rows and into circles. We call it life together around here, small groups. And because we know from our own experience that there's something that happens when people sit in circles face to face and they begin to, you know, when it comes to applying the scripture, there are things that happen that never happen in the rows. I mean, there's something that happens in a circle where I begin to make application in my life as I'm talking about it, as I'm hearing somebody else talk about what that scripture has meant for them and how they've struggled with it, or how they've maybe, you know, been successful at implementing it in their life and the benefit that came from that. You know, it's kind of where the rubber meets the road. I mean, in the circles, you talk about your relationships, not just some random relationship. You know, in the circles, we talk about our finances, you know, and how can I, you know, get my finances under control, not just some general financial principles. You know, in circles, we can talk about things like our attitude and my forgiveness issues, not just general life issues. See, we discovered that when it comes to application, circles is the best place for it to happen. And 8 weeks from today, we're going to begin one of the most important things that we do around here all year long. In fact, in this next year, it's going to be a big year. I mean, we got a building launching here shortly, but in 8 weeks, we're going to begin what's called an all-church journey. And it's going to be called Kingdom Come, and this is for 6 weeks. All of our environments here at Cross Point, beginning October 20th, are going to be pointing in the same direction. Meaning, if you have kids that come with you, what they're studying in their kids' rooms, what they're dialoguing and applying in student ministry is going to be the same thing, same topics you're, you know, wrestling with here in our weekend services. And then we're going to give you some free resources. We're going to give you some journals, some things to kind of track and keep, you know, keep track of how you're growing through this experience, what you're experiencing. But by far, let me tell you, by far the most important thing that's going to happen during these 6 weeks is we're going to get out of the rows and into circles. All right, it's not that we're not going to have our weekend service. This is going to be the starting point, but we're going to be challenging every single adult that comes into this room to get into a circle, get into small groups, and just for 6 weeks, and to make the application. Now, here's the thing. For this to be successful, we need 30 small group host sites in order for us to have a place for every adult to connect. All right, and we don't set goals around here for many of our environments. In fact, this is the only one. I mean, we track attendance, we track volunteers, we track a lot of things, but we set goals for our groups. We have a goal of 30 small group sites, which gives a site for 10 to 12 adults in each of those sites to be able to connect during the week, sit in circles, get out of rows. And so, you know, maybe part of your next step today is saying, hey, I want to host one of those groups. I'm going to create a place in my home so I can grow to a new place. Because here's what we've learned over the last few years. People who host groups grow at a different level than the rest of the group. Now, as a host, you don't necessarily have to gather your group. We're going to help you do that. You don't necessarily have to be a Bible scholar. You just have to know how to read and have a space, whether it's your home or Starbucks, to meet. And the material, the group material, will help lead the group. You just start it each week. But what we've noticed is people who are hosting, they're more intent on doing the homework, on being ready to share when the discussion begins, and hosts just grow to a whole new place. So listen, if you want to grow to a whole new place this fall, sign up to host. Mark that on your next step card. There's one of the places where you can do that for 6 weeks. After 6 weeks, there's a very clear time where the group will come to an end, and you can decide if you want to continue with that group or not. Now, for others of us, you're sitting there thinking, man, I've never been in a circle like that. I mean, I've always thought church is in the rows. Well, see, we're a different church. We think church happens in the rows, but also in circles. And so maybe your next step today is to say, you know, in 3 or 4 weeks when we begin group sign up, I'm gonna get in a circle. And you can declare that today. In fact, it'd be helpful if you just mark that. You can kind of promise yourself, when this day comes, I will find a group. I'll be able to look over all these groups that are forming. We'll have signups here on site. And you can get in a group. And here's the thing. See, we care way too much to allow you to go through this next season just sitting in rows and not being in that environment where you actually can grow and make applications to a whole new level. And let me just be really clear. We don't profit from this, all right? Crosspoint, we don't put a joy box in the groups. Thank you. You know, we don't take that. I mean, there's no giving that happens. This is solely for you. But what we've discovered is that life change happens at its best when we're face-to-face in a living room, getting real, you know, hearing other people get real, just kind of struggling and celebrating together as we grapple with the issues that the scriptures raise for us. And you might be thinking, man, Kurt, I don't know anybody. I mean, what groups do I pick? Well, here's the thing. Go to one of the chilling grills. All right, that's why these are strategically planned right now. So you can go out and connect with some people from Crosspoint in a casual, fun environment. We do prefer you pick somebody's backyard that we're promoting. That's always a good thing, as Eric said. But, you know, connect with a few people. Get to know somebody. You know, start a group together. Join a group they're going to be in and get connected so you can join a group. All right? Now, one last thing, and I want to dance around this real carefully, but I want to be real specific to the point on this. And I want to speak to those of you, as we talk about boring church, those of us who are parents, myself included, and some of us like to bring our kids into service every now and then, and you know, bring something for them to color on and that kind of thing. And let me just tell you something that maybe you're not seeing, you know. Sometimes we think, because I grew up this way. Listen, you know, I grew up sitting in church, you know, coloring on the McDonald's, you know, giveaway, and the Chick-fil-A. I didn't have Chick-fil-A back then. You know, and you think, man, my kids are absorbed in something, right? No, they're not. Let me just be honest with you. I'm a professional. They're not absorbing anything, all right? You know what's happening? You're actually training them to hate church. Let me just be really honest. That's how, you know, my sitting through services growing up trained me to hate church. And one of the cool things is we have extraordinary children's environments out there. In fact, each of our children's environments are specifically age appropriate to have a learning at the level of each age group, all the way from preschool up through high school students. On-site on Sundays, these go through sixth grade. Student ministry, 7 through 12, meet another night. We don't do childcare. All right, nursery, we can't really teach babies, so, you know, we do care for nursery, you know, infants, but preschool on up, and the cool thing is we're teaching the next generation that rows are good, but circles are better. Because in every single environment, preschool, elementary, Area 56, all the way to student ministry, there's some element in some way, shape, or form that gets those kids in a circle, in a smaller group community where they make the applications. And let me tell you what. As a parent, if you want to help get your kids in those environments, go serve in one of those environments. Help create the circles. We're beginning new small groups because of our growth this fall. We need small group leaders. Maybe that's your next step today, to serve in one of your kids' environments. You don't have to be the teacher of everything. There's roles where you can just, you know, help a small group. But get your kids in those environments. Teach them that rows are good, circles are better. A couple weeks ago, I was talking to my son. And he just, you know, out of the blue asked me this question. He said, "Hey, Dad, I really hate going to Grandpa's church. It's really boring. Don't you think so?" I'm like, wow, that's a loaded question. I don't even know where he came up with that, because he's not even been in a while. And so I do like I do with any loaded question. I respond with a question. Well, Matt, what makes you think that? You know, kind of curious to figure out. And he said, "Wow, I mean, I just don't understand it. I don't get it. I don't." He's like, "I don't understand anything they say." And he's like, "And then, by the way, our church is just cool." And I'm like, "Yes, I love cool." Because see, one of my dreams for our children's environments beyond—it's more than this. One of my dreams, though, is that when kids come, they are so excited when they leave that the next week, even if their parents don't want to come back to church, you know, they want to sleep in, that they're like waking mom and dad up. Come on, we gotta go. Yeah, that's why we put Wii's and video games, and we do other things too. But you know, we want them to run, literally run to their children's environments because we want them to think church is fun and connective. And then I had this moment where I'm like, well. Oh, is that all he thinks? Is it just cool? I'm like, Matt, but do you learn anything? He said, oh, yeah. He said, you know, remember a couple weeks ago when, you know, I found that iPod in the cul-de-sac and we knew it was the neighbors? And he said, well, you know, I took it back to Jackson right away because, you know, we learned that, you know, Jesus wants us to always do the right thing. And I'm like, he's making the application. Not only is it cool, but he's learning that, hey, I can learn, but I gotta apply. And the same is true for you and I. So, we've got some next steps today. We're going to bring the house lights up. On the back of your card are some next steps. And, you know, maybe God's been prompting you today. Maybe, you know, maybe you need to host a group for the journey. And you've always heard about that, but you've never done it. And maybe today's the day where you do that. Maybe you've never been in a small group, and you need today to begin to start thinking about, you know, maybe I'll join one of those, or maybe even declare it and say, I'm gonna mark it today to my, and I promise it to myself that I'm going to get into a circle and give it a shot for 6 weeks. Or, you know, maybe you need to volunteer in one of our kids' environments. You know, you want to go help create a place for your kids to grow and experience. The church is not something to endure, but it's actually something that I can have fun and learn and apply at the same time. Or maybe the first next step is your step. Maybe for, you know, for as much time as you've been in church, there's always been certain things that you would hear, but you just kind of walked away from it. You'd hear, you'd be convicted, you'd feel like, man, that's a good idea, I even believe that, but you don't go and do it. And today, it's just a day to say, I'm gonna choose to do this today. So don't leave here today before you mark a next step, take a next step, whatever it might be, and let me pray for you. God, I thank you for these words from James, these words from Jesus, and God, I pray that you would give us the wisdom to know what to do with what you're saying to us today. Every single one of us are in a different place. And God, help us to have the courage to actually follow through and do it. Whether it's hosting a group, whether it's getting in a group, whether it's beginning to volunteer, whatever it might be. But God, I know I got to think that for many of us, there are certain things we've heard at different points. And we've just walked out. We said, oh man, yeah, that's bad. I really need to change this. But we've just kind of never made the change. And maybe today is the day we begin to allow you to take us to a new place. So God, we just thank you. We thank you we can have fun in church. We thank you we can have an experience that's relevant and speaks to us exactly where we are. We just pray that you help us to get out of here and get it done today. In your